Tears is filmed before a live studio audience.
Well, you do what they did. You create another character and you create some sexual tension again and you almost start over. I mean, we had introduced a lot of other people by that time, so the cast was bigger and around. It was one of these magical matches that worked. The two of them worked together. It just worked. So you didn't want to lose Shelley, but it was time to. It was not all pleasant what was going on there. And
because she wanted to leave?
She was tough to work with, and then they were pushing, and she wasn't sure she wanted to stay, and it just got all of them to thinking about what if.
Hello, all my friends, to the show that never ends. And the life we lead continues to push on. We've all had a rotten day, so what's Juskow gonna say? He hopes to take a moment of your time to make you feel much better when you hear about his day. Little magic power makes your problems seem okay. If you're looking for action and nothing that's new, Juskow in the City is the podcast for you. If you like listening to things that no one else would do, Juskow in the City is the podcast for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Juskow in the City, April 9th, 2024 edition. Nice to see everybody today. Beautiful day in New York City after a major earthquake strikes the city. I buried the lead by saying it's a beautiful day. No, it is a beautiful day, but yes, there was an earthquake. It woke me up. You woke me up, damn it. About 10:20, I had fallen back asleep. I had a bad night sleeping, and then all of a sudden I'd fall back asleep. I'm like finally having a good time. All of a sudden there's an earthquake. Are you kidding me? I got too much go. I don't have time for nonsense. I woke up. I thought it was noon. It was only 10 o'clock. That's why I marked the time. I said I'm pretty sure that was an earthquake because I felt them before. And then finally, I'm sitting there watching the cable TV, and I turn it back on to Channel 4, and there's breaking news. There was an earthquake, and I wasn't crazy. And then you get all the texts. Are you and your family okay? I'm like, what do you want? What are we going to do? What if I'm not okay? What am I going to do? I mean, why wouldn't I be okay? I mean, it's just, I felt one. I could have sworn. Now they're saying there was one. On March 14th, look it up on my phone. You can see me saying, was there an earthquake today? And nobody had any information. And I knew I felt one, a very small one. But I could feel it. I feel them all the time. I am at one with the earth, which is why my life is really shitty, because this planet is going to hell. And so is my life and career for years. So I am at one with the universe. I'll never forget feeling it also. And in the early 2000s at my office, when I told my boss, I'm telling you, that was an earthquake. And then, of course, it was. I can smell the charge, you know, before it happens. I'm one of those animals that gets a sense of doom before it happens. Like a dog can't, you know, that's why I couldn't sleep. I was having a lot of trouble. And I'm like, I don't know. I got a bad feeling about today. I'm getting too old for this shit. But yeah, there's an earthquake and everybody, oh my God, all the people on Instagram, did you feel that? Did you feel? I'm like, grow up, you sissies. Although I can't think of a worse place for an earthquake than New York City, more than California, New York City or Taiwan, where they do have the bad ones with these large, big buildings, and certainly living in a skyscraper building isn't the greatest thing for an earthquake. But then, of course, it's not good for any weather-related incidents, but these are the lives we have chosen. So everybody's talking about the big earthquake today in New York City because it is rare. But is it rare? I mean, I just told you about three that I've known of since 2000. The fact of the matter is they probably weren't keeping track of any of this stuff, and maybe an earthquake happens in New York City every 100 years. I mean, as I was doing my lecture for my mother's home and the people that lived there yesterday, I was explaining to them that, you know, when we're talking about the 1800s or the 1700s, that nothing has changed, and, you know, that these buildings were flat. I mean, well, I'll just start here. Yesterday, I go down to, yesterday's the big lecture at Rhoda's old age home, and which, of course, it's not called, but I like calling it that because it's funny. Yeah, performing at the old age home. My mama's got a chishka. Kishka. That's Eugene Levy in Waiting for Guffman.
I think the one really important thing that I learned from my whole experience in working with Corky is that I do indeed have talent. And a couple of things, actually. B, I have to entertain. I have to entertain. And you have to go where you are needed. You have to go where the crowds are. And you have to go where the love is. And the love for me right now is in Miami, not Blaine.
My booby made a kishka, she made it big and fat. My Zeta took one look at it and said, I can't eat that. Oh, mama, 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 oh, mama me, oh, my.
So now I got to even get up earlier on Thursdays, which, you know, Thursdays and Fridays have my day to sleep a little bit later, but I got to get up early, I got to get there. Even though the lecture's at 1, but I'm nervous about getting the car out of the city. In fact, yesterday was awful. There was a new guy working at the garage. He didn't understand why I needed to go downstairs and help him, and he was taking the car. He's like, oh, I just got to make a stop on the second floor. And I'm like, what do you mean you got to make a stop? Just drop me off on the first floor, you fucking idiot. And then he walked. He was being a dick, I'm pretty sure, doing it on purpose. He was driving this car around. He's trying to hit me with the car. He just didn't get it. I'm going to tell the guys about him next week. And then he bought me the first floor, and then I said, don't turn the car off. And he's like, no, I have to in the elevator, because technically they do have to, because you're gonna get sick with the fumes. But I'm like, don't you see the problem I have? Don't turn it off. Sure, you can last 5 seconds in a elevator. Ugh, kids pissing me off. So all that, right? So that's why I always got to leave early and trying to get there on time. Even trying to get there by 11, I still got there at around 11:30, which is fine. I set up everything. Then everybody came in at 1 o'clock. They come in at 12:59. I always thought old people come in very early. They do not. They just had a little lunch, and then they wheel over. And there, I don't know, I guess about 30 people. My mother introduced me. That was the plan. And she was roasting me. She goes, well, this is my son. He's a little weird. And I'm like, thanks. You know, I could have done that intro by myself. But he's a very good dinner companion. It was the strangest intro of all time. She's like, what should I say about you? Just say, you know, I was on Crashing. You know, maybe you could talk about how I helped the library put together. No, I don't want to mention the library. I'm like, why wouldn't you want to plug the library? You don't know how showbiz works at all, Rhoda. You just don't get it. You're not in show business. I'm in show business. So I did it, and it didn't last very. It was shorter than I thought. I didn't have time this week to put it together, you know, to practice. So I kind of knew it was a little short, whereas my lectures in class are too long. I just didn't have time this week to practice, so I had to hope for the best, and it was like 10 minutes shorter than I wanted it to be. But that's good, because everybody really liked it. And they said, oh, the only problem was it was too short. It was 40 minutes instead of 50 minutes. But I'll fix that next week when I go back. But everybody really liked it. And the stuff I was talking about was like old New York, obviously, because I'm talking about Broadway. I'm talking about the theaters. Now they moved uptown. And I think everybody found it interesting. In fact, I was telling this. We had the Comedy Cellar Christmas party Tuesday. I was telling it to Tom Papa and his wife and Bonnie McFarlane. I was explaining my lecture, and I think everybody seemed riveted. They didn't look away or they told me, like, I'd like to take this course. So I think people find it interesting. First of all, and I'm not going to tell you the whole thing, but as the theaters moved uptown where they start on kind of Wall Street, you know, where we get to the Broadway that you and I all know up in the 40s and 50s, there's nothing going on up there. So John Jacob Astor buys this land. I think he got it on the cheap from Aaron Burr, who was already a disgrace. And he bought that whole land that's considered Broadway. And the mayor of Manhattan at the time said, hey, come up to 42nd Street where you can really breathe in the fresh, clean air. I am not kidding. That was the advertisement in 1869. He's like, go, come up to 42nd. You breathe this nice, clean air up here. And then, of course, they show them a picture of 42nd Street on, you know, in the 70s. And they're like, ah, they all got it. So that's good. You don't know how a 90-year-old's going to react to anything. I think they're all just little dories. My knees going like, can he tell your face? You having a good time? But they all got it. And then I was talking about how there was this guy, Edwin Booth, and he was the most popular person on the planet, like Taylor Swift is today. And then his brother shot Lincoln, and it ruined it. However, before that happened, the Booth brothers put on a play, Julius Caesar, actually, they put on a Shakespeare play, Julius Caesar, one night as a benefit to raise money to build a Shakespeare statue. And that Shakespeare statue still stands today in Central Park. So the guy that killed Lincoln's benefit performance to build a grand statue and a grand statement to the great William Shakespeare still stands today, thanks to John Wilkes Booth. Now, if that's not interesting, I don't know what is. Plus, there's so much more interesting stuff, I think. There was the Bowery Theater down in Bowery, which is Lower Manhattan, and then the Astor Place Theater, Opera House, which was still Lower Manhattan, but a little further up. And these two theaters had a rivalry because the Bowery Theater thought the Astor Opera House was a little too big for their bridges. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. And I think I meant breaches, not bridges. They had a fucking riot in Astor Place about this. They were also fighting over something else. They were fighting over, there was two guys, I can't remember their names right now, that were doing different productions of Hamlet and who had the better Hamlet. So there was a guy doing a Hamlet at the Bowery Theater and there was a guy doing Hamlet at the Astor Place. And the people in Astor Place were like, our Hamlet's so much better than yours, that they rioted in whatever it is in the 1800s. And 20 people were killed. It was a massive riot over which production had the best Hamlet, which I told them, you know, guys, and I'm telling you guys this too, if and when we realize, especially during this election year, that the earth is just between earthquakes, natural disasters, the earth warming, global warming, and politics, and Israel, and Gaza, and all this kind of stuff, if you feel that it's falling apart, the fact of the matter is it's been like this forever. This may put you at a little bit of ease for people that are very stressed by this kind of stuff. And we all are at this point. We don't know what happens when Trump wins or when he loses, right? So lots of people are stressed. And that's just America I'm talking about, right? There's so much shit going on in the world. But all this stuff has been going on since the dawn of time. And the problem is we forget. We forget our past, and we remember it when we're told about it, and then we rethink it, but we forget. All this is nothing new. Think about it like this. If, when all these things are pretty much all fought over religion, why do we want Trump? Because he believes in not abortion and abortion rights and all religious belief nonsense, right? Let alone Israel and Palestine, right? All religious, the Muslim, everybody's angry. It's religion that is the cause of all war, religion. So let's just say the universe gets together and we all decide that Presbyterian is the true religion, right? And we are all unified as one and there is no more war. The problem is we are still going to fight over who is the better Hamlet, and it will escalate. Do you see my point here? It doesn't matter. It's never going to stop because people just suck. There's good people on both sides, but I did that more like Seinfeld instead of Trump. But I mean, it's just, this is the way the world works. What did you say? You better not be talking about that production of Hamlet I saw yesterday. Oh boy, are you going to get it. So there's no way to win, don't you see? And that is the story. But I love these stories, and they seem to get it. And we talked about the beginning of the Broadway musical, and this is great too. I think you'll like this. You seem to like when I talk a little about my lectures. There's this guy. So the first musical ever considered a Broadway musical is a musical called The Black Crook. And it was written by this guy, and he puts it on at this Niblo's Garden down in the Bowery District. And it's doing okay. It's just a play. It's not a musical. And people are kind of falling asleep, and it's not working, but it's on its way. But there's another guy named Jared or something, and he's in France, and he's kind of scouting talent. And he sees these French girls dancing, and he's like, wow, this show is spectacular. Because, you know, France and London, they've been doing all this stuff for centuries, where America's just getting started in theater and all that kind of stuff. I was telling them how P.T. Barnum, the governor of Connecticut, this guy knew how to put on a show. So he was bringing in freak shows and stuff to fill the places. So they didn't have Broadway yet, you know, what we know as musical theater and stuff like that. So this guy's in France. He sees these dancing girls. He goes, I want you working for me. It's just right out of Cocktail, where that guy says to Tom Cruise, after they see him flipping the bottles, you two guys are too hot to be working in a place like this. I run the hottest club in New York City. I'm telling you, it's that exact scene.
Yeah! Fucking two stars like you wasting your talents in a hole like this.
Secret admirer.
No, I'm serious. I got the hottest saloon in town. I want you guys working for me. In 2 weeks, you'll be famous.
I've been famous for 10 years. Just give me the money.
I got the hippie shade.
He said, I want you girls working for me. So he goes, I want you guys to do a show. I got an in at the New York, the New York Academy of Music, I think. New York Academy of Music, whatever. It's either the arts or music, whatever it is, right? When I see the slides, I know exactly what it is. You know what I'm saying? That triggers my head because I have so much information in my head right now. So he goes, I want to bring you guys to the New York Academy of Music or whatever, or dance, whatever the fuck it is, on Fifth Avenue. It's going to be great. And you guys are going to do a show there. You come with me. And can't you picture it in your head? The guy's bringing him on the plane. He's like, I was like watching Easter Parade this way. It's like Fred Astaire going to the shops and buying clothing for his dance partner and stuff. It's exactly that. He's like, now I want the girls here by 10 a.m. or else. So he brings them on the plane, and they're all excited. And they're like, ooh, la, la, we are going to America. And then they go to the New York Academy of Music. They get off the plane with their luggage. They go to New York Academy of Music. It's on fire. And they're like, what are we going to do now? I thought you said we could work here. Change in plan. Can't you just picture making a movie of that, and they're there with their luggage, and he's just like, okay. And it's all these girls, and they don't have a place to stay or go. I don't know what was happening. So he says, well, I know the guy that manages this Niblo's place. Let me talk to him. Let me talk to him. I'm mixing up everything. He's like Fredo in The Godfather. He goes, Mike, let me talk to Mike. Let me talk. Mike, you can't go to Las Vegas and treat a guy like Mo Green like this. I'll talk to him. So he talks to the guy that manages the theater, which now he's like, well, I already got a show in here, The Black Crook. And he's sitting there watching the theater. He goes, well, you know what this show needs? Dancing girls. And they're like, I don't understand. Ah, trust me, I just got these girls, and they're terrific. It's going to lighten up the show. And he talks to the author. He goes, this guy's got an idea. I don't know if you're in. And the author's like, well, this show kind of sucks, so let's lighten it up. And they just add music and dancing, and all of a sudden the thing is the most fabulous thing that's ever happened in New York theater. And it lasts like 500 performances, and they make a big spectacle. It's got scene changes and costumes, and the guy worked it out on the fly, and that is considered the first technical American musical in the history of Broadway theater, The Black Crook. And those kind of stories, I think people like them. I think they like them. And then, you know, I keep going. I talk about this Tin Pan Alley. I don't know if you ever heard of Tin Pan Alley. It's where in the late 1800s, where all these publishing houses were around 28th and Broadway. All these music public, you know, you can go sell your song there, you know. And George M. Cohan used to, George M. Cohan used to go there. So, but it's called Tin Pan Alley, which a name you probably heard, because there were so many pianos out of tune, it just sounded like somebody was banging on a tin pan, like after COVID, when we were all banging on the pans. That's what apparently it sounded like. They had a piano in every office building there. You can see pictures of music publishing. And Cohen goes in there, sells a song, and they put on the first show in 1904, which is Yankee Doodle Dandy. No. No, it's called Little Johnny Jones. That's the name of the play, but it has the song Yankee Doodle Dandy and Give My Regards to Broadway, 1904. And those songs are still fucking popular. It's incredible. And then I pointed out how they bought back Little Johnny Jones in the 70s with one of the greatest actors of our time. And then I took the picture, Donny Osmond. Big laughs. And then, you know, because this is the generation that gets it, you know, I couldn't do that to my 20-year-old kids. And then, as if it could get any better, they replaced him, and the picture goes, with David Cassidy. Hello. And I'm like, but come on, nobody could. And then you have to give it back to their generation. But of course, nobody could beat James Cagney. And they're like, yeah, yes, yes. He gets us. So if I don't know how to please a crowd in comedy, at least I can do it in my lecturing. That seems to be my where I am at my best. Then I lectured as we were walking down the hall. I think my mother's very happy. She texted me today. She's like, David, you were so good, because I think she's getting a lot of praise. Oh, my God. So this is even worse for Beth, who's just really getting shit on for this party. Really getting shit on. Now, we already know my mother missed her birthday and did not care. And then we also know that she's just mad at her for not throwing her the proper party. But now Beth's been talking to the caterer, and she's like, oh, by the way, what kind of food are we having? She knows, you know, bagels, because it's at 11 in the morning, bagels and spreads, stuff like that. And she's like, oh, what? Oh, fuck you. What do you want them to serve? Lobster and steak? Because I think that's what she wants them to serve. What she's doing to poor Beth, I swear, it's just not right. But for me, again, being the firstborn Jewish boy, and now lecturing, your son was incredible. I know, I wish he was putting my party together. It's fucking awesome. It's fantastic. And I'm pretty sure Billy and I have to sing, there are chicks just right for some kissing. And I mean to kiss me a few. I think, oh, God. So I guess my mom is in all her glory now, since everything went well, because, hey, my mother has been around and seen me do some pretty shitty gigs. She's also, my mother has seen the highest of the highs that anybody can go in comedy as performance-wise, like on this TV show, which you've never seen, but I have somewhere. All I have to do is get it digitized and you can see it. And the lowest of lows, where people are just booing, and then she doesn't know what to tell her friends. And so it's good we had a happy medium yesterday, and I have to go back next week, and everybody's very excited. And I guess the word will get around, or maybe we'll have a full house. So I think the place holds like, you know, a couple hundred people. And then, you know, then I leave. And I go up to teach my other class. I mean, it's so weird on your day off to be even busier than on your actual working day. Got to class and then taught 1986 and 87 in film. And I think they liked it. I really tried to concentrate on the comedy. One of the things I was talking about, which was kind of interesting, is about Shelley Long and what a piece of shit she is. I was trying to explain. I don't know. Maybe I went too far, but I just been fine. You know, we all know that Shelley Long sucks. Like most of us know, even if you're not in show business, that Cheers, the cast of Cheers, just hated working with her, and she was nothing but trouble. And, you know, they obviously really hated her after she left a hit show. Everybody was mad at that. Just not even, first you're mad because you enjoy the show and you're like, now it's going to suck, even though they were so smart and allowed it to run for another six seasons. But everybody was pissed that she was leaving. Everybody in the cast, everybody who's watching the show is a fan of the show, even if you don't know anything about Hollywood. But then if you're like an actor or wannabe an actor like me, and you get this, again, like we talked about last week, a lottery ticket to this so popular show that you really get a grand prize of your career, and then you just leave because you want to concentrate on film, while Ted Danson is trying to concentrate on film too on his summer break. And case in point, which I was talking to them about, the number one box office movie in 1987, Three Men and a Baby. So Shelley Long can suck it, as Ted Danson proved in 1987. And the best part is, I have the screams. I'm like, now this movie never should have worked at all. There's no way this movie should be number one. It stars, which I kept telling them how TV stars really, it was really difficult to make it in the movies. So it stars Ted Danson from the TV show Cheers, Tom Selleck from the TV show Magnum P.I., and it's directed by Spock. How did this movie become number one? But it did. And so Shelley Long had the... So when I was talking about 1986, Bette Midler's in Ruthless People. These are the top 10 movies. Ruthless People and, damn it, what's the other one? Oh, Down and Out Beverly Hills. Number 11 and 9. No, sorry, 10 and like 9 of the year. So Bette Midler's a bona fide star, let alone she was a bona fide star anyway, nominated for Academy Award in the 70s, and she's still 10 years later, and she's still young, making movies that make money. Maybe it's not her name that's doing it, but she's in blockbuster movies. And so her and Shelley Long do Outrageous Fortune, if you remember this piece of shit. I never even saw it. I couldn't wait not to see it. Not for Bette Midler, but I don't want to see Shelley Long in anything. She's the worst. And I found out that in doing my research for this class, I did not know this. And certainly a lot of the stuff I tell in class is stuff I already knew in the 80s when it came out, like when I was talking about Ishtar. I'm like, I didn't need to go on Wikipedia or anything to find out information. I remember when this came out and all the news and stuff about its demise, this movie with How Can It Fail, Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman, directed by Elaine May, written and directed by Elaine May, supposed to be a road. I mean, how can it fail? But it, oh boy, it's a legendary bomb. And it wasn't like, so I looked it up and the director goes, Shelley Long is a piece of shit. She's really difficult to work with. And as if it could get any worse, they were trying to figure out whose name should be first on the poster. And clearly Bette Midler is a bona fide movie star and should be first. And it's not like she was being polite. Bette Midler is a diva, but that's okay because she is that. We get that. And she's the divine Ms. M, you know? So Shelley Long can suck it. And she's given them a fight. And it is finally decided, if you can fucking believe this, that Bette Midler's name will go first on the east of the Mississippi, and they changed the posters to accommodate this idiot Shelley Long, where her name will go first, west of the Mississippi. Can you believe it? Shelley Long, thank goodness, after that, never to be heard from again. People had just had it. She was like Joe Pesci and Goodfellas. Yeah, they had just had it with, Joe Pesci and Casino. The guys had just had it with Nikki. It was his time. I mean, that was pretty much it. She got whacked after that because nobody wanted to work with her anymore. That's why she wasn't invited to the Cheers reunion. She could say, oh, I was sick. I was all that. Nobody wanted her there. They just did it for the Emmys, I think, right? Recently, they just had all the... Everybody gets along at Cheers. Ted Danson, Rhea Perlman, Woody Harrelson, George Wendt, John... They all love each other. They loved working together. Kirstie Alley, they liked before she was dead. They all enjoyed each other's company. They were all glad that Shelley Long was gone, even though there must have been major panic for people like George Wendt and John Ratzenberger, who just are actors who will take any gig. And like, why are you leaving this gravy train? And they just hated her, and they just didn't want her around. And of course, she would show up at a couple of these things. She wasn't even invited this time. because just people are just fed up, and apparently she's still just a major twat. So yipes, it's really fucked up, and it's just it's annoying as shit if you've ever auditioned for sitcoms, as I've done, where you know that, and of course David Caruso, we know that story, and it worked out for him, I suppose, because he's a man. I don't know. I mean, so frustrating just thinking about it now. So, anyway, that was yesterday. Just saying that as long as we are continuing, yesterday I went out to also this bar afterwards, which was pretty cool. I got some pictures with our friend Irene. So we added a female into the mix, which was fun. And I had I didn't eat all day. Well, I had 5 munchkins, as I usually do before the lecture. And then I had a small bag of peanuts because I was afraid my stomach was going to be growling. Even though I don't know. I think that I don't know what it is. So I just ate a very small bag of peanuts. So I really hadn't eaten that all day. And then I went to town. I got the wings, the Thai chili hot garlic wings. Not, this is a different place. Never been here. There was a big darts league going on in the back, but we found the great table. They actually had, it's so classic, they had regular Sam Adams on tap. Now, you know, I've been looking for that. I can't find it anywhere. And of course, I couldn't believe it. She bought it. I'm like, you really have it? I cannot believe it. I said, can I get another one? She goes, oh, it's tapped out. The guy's got to change the tap. And I'm like, she's never coming back. She finally comes back. She goes, you're out of luck. They don't have any more. I'm like, yeah, no kidding. Jesus Christ. I could have bet that was going to happen. Oh, my God. I don't know what it is with that fucking regular Boston old school lager. I like it, and I can't get it anywhere. My God, even when they have it, they don't have it. But then I had what was called the Jersey Burger, which I think was a burger with ham and a fried egg on it. Don't tell my mother. Holy cow, was that good. And they had those little skinny fries. It was beautiful. Oh, it was a wonderful evening after a very long day, which of course is going to get longer because next semester it is all set. 2 classes, romantic comedies, maybe the history of romantic comedies from 2:30 to 5. And then the 1980s class from 5:30 to 8. That's a long fucking day of talking. That's why my voice is kind of going today, but I deserve it. I went out every night this week. I went out Monday, Tuesday. I worked until late Wednesday working on all this stuff. Thursday, obviously went out. I'm going out tonight. I'm going out Saturday. I think I'm even going out Sunday. Fortunately, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, next week, nothing. Thank goodness, because I need to prepare for all this other shit. I am so excited for summer break, like a child, that I am like, oh, I'm very excited to have a 3-month break. And I still haven't had time to write the book, which of course is coming up in the deadline. So it's so funny, on Sunday, or on last Friday, after I left you, I was just like done. I took the day off. I didn't do anything. And then Saturday I worked, but Sunday was Easter, so I didn't have to work. So I woke up at noon, and I knew I had to do work. Like, I had to get going. Even though it was my day off, I knew I had to get these lectures prepared. And I was going to need all the time I could, even on a day off. Major bummer. I got up, and I was just watched TV. And I watched this movie I had taped, because it sounded hot. Now I get it, that it's a little creepy. Is this movie I'd never seen, or never even heard of, called Susan Slept Here. And it's with Debbie Reynolds. And William Powell? No, I think William Powell. Do I have that right? No, maybe the guy's name was Dick something or other, because it was Dick Powell, maybe. I don't know. And it was about this guy that's a bachelor, and he has a fiance, something Francis, maybe. I can't remember. And Debbie Reynolds is little. I'm like, well, Debbie Reynolds used to be cute. I'll watch that and see. And then it's like, the description was, and he falls for this 18-year-old girl who he has more fun with than his fiance. I'm like, well, that sounds exciting. I didn't realize he was going to be 50 in the movie, but it's so funny. I looked it up, and in the movie he says he's 35. And I was like, oh, I guess he's joking. But no, they kept saying he was 35, but he looks like he's 70. You know, back then, everybody was. He was like 50-something. And, they fall for each other. I'll spoil the ending for it. I think they get married. I don't know. It's something they could never make today. And it was kind of fun because it's a stupid movie from the 50s, I guess. And it's just before Singing in the Rain. So I thought it would be interesting. I'd never seen any of these old movies. And like it was on TCM and I just went through and I was like, I kind of want to see more old movies now when I was never in the mood for them as a kid. And now I'm a little bit more interested in them. So that's what I did. And I was watching. And of course, he lives in a townhouse in Manhattan. And I don't know, you know, these things like Mr. Blanding's Dream House or whatever, where they all make $20,000 a year and somehow live with servants and everything, which of course he had in the movie. I'm like, yeah, where is this? And they're making eggs. They're making beautiful sunny-side up eggs and bacon. I'm like, oh man, I'd like to have that today. So I went in my kitchen. I actually made sunny-side up eggs, which I couldn't believe I had eggs. And I used those Morningstar Farm sausages I like, and I put some toast, and I made breakfast today. I made some chocolate milk. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. Well, I never get to do this. I never get to hang around on a Saturday or Sunday because I work. So I never have like a leisurely Sunday anymore like regular people do. So it was exciting. And then I went back to bed. I watched the movie and took a little nap. And then when I woke up, I got down to business. And I really got a lot of work done. But it was a really nice day that most people have on a regular weekends, and I just don't seem to have anymore. So that was kind of fun and necessary because my week was insane. Monday, obviously I woke up at 5:30 and went to work. And I'm excited about the eclipse. That's why I think the earthquake has to do with the eclipse. I mean, does that not make a lot of sense in a way? Don't wonky things happen when the eclipse is out, when the earth, the sun and the moon are getting together? Weird things happen. So why not an earthquake? I don't know. It makes a lot of sense to me. If the universe is always trying to tell us something. They're telling us, you better be careful about that eclipse on Monday. But I bought my glasses. I'm going to be at the office, but I'm going to try to go downstairs and definitely check it out. And I think I bought NASA-qualified glasses. You know, nobody knows. So then maybe I'll have an excuse not to work anymore, so that'll be fine. But on Monday, I went to the screening of Drew Friedman's documentary. This guy, Drew Friedman, if you don't know him, I didn't know him. He's an artist. He paints or draws like dots, mostly Jewish comedians. You know, old school, but some of our friends as well, like Gilbert, of course. And that's why I went with Gilbert's wife and her daughter and, you know, Abe Vigoda, Groucho Marx, Milton Berle. He writes pictures like this. He's also written for, you've recognized his stuff because he's written for Mad Magazine. He did the cover art. There's a Sopranos issue where he wrote and all these magazines. He's a really interesting guy. I think we're about the same age. And Frank Santapadre was always like, how do you not know him? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know him, but he knows everybody I know. And I still didn't even meet him that night. So it was a screening of this documentary that this guy made. And first I walked about 3 miles up to Dara's house. And I saw their son come out and he goes, hey, because we don't really know each other by name. But I'm like, oh, how you doing? I'm going up to your mom's. He's like, I know. So I'm glad that they know me now because I'm never sure when you come in and the father's dead, and then all of a sudden there's this guy hanging around. You know what I mean? So for a long, but it seems like the kids are pretty cool. Her daughter is just incredible. I mean, really incredible. Not only is she just so gorgeous, and the only reason, again, I say this because her mom keeps saying it, isn't my daughter gorgeous? Isn't she gorgeous? You can't stop looking at her. I mean, she's that pretty. I know she's 16, but I mean, she really is stunning. So I went to their house and they gave me she made some fish tacos from this place, Hello Fresh. And that seems like a good idea that I should get in on. I saw that for 4 days, it would only be like $40 and you just make meals. That sounds perfect. I might order it this week since I'm home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right? Give it a try. Hello Fresh, it's called. So we're in there and they're, oh, can you help my daughter with her homework? And I'm like, what is it? She's like, it's math. No, I couldn't. And they are doing, and apparently Dara is like a big math nerd, and they're doing stuff, you know, with algebraic equations, like in the Big Bang Theory. I'm like, I have no idea what's happening. And quite frankly, I'm not exactly sure why you invited me over again to watch you guys do math. I just had to sit there quietly. But she was trying to get her stuff done, and she's like, Mom, I have to take, because she wanted her to go. She's like, I have to take a shower. I got to get ready. She's like, you look fine. She's like, no, you got to let her get ready. She's got to be comfortable. She's like, thank you. And then it's a good thing I said so. they gave her a shout out on stage. I'd like to thank Lily for her documentary on her father's art. And she stood up and said, I was like, you remember? Thank God you took that shower. She's like, I know. Thank you. You are welcome. So we walked out. Darren and I walked over, and it's so funny when you think about a 16-year-old in New York City. She just walked over on her own. You know, it's like about a block or two away. She just walked over. I'll meet you there. I you just can't imagine somebody doing that in New York City, a 16-year-old meeting you anywhere, anywhere. I'll meet you there. Don't worry about it. And she comes on time. And so we were going to sit in the back, but then Evan reserved us seats in the front row, so we went down, and we were sitting in, like, I don't know, the third row maybe. Because Evan was there too. My friend Evan, who I saw last night and who works on the On Patrol show. So him and his friend were there, and so I got to sit next to Evan and Dara. So it was a beautiful night already. And then they had the panel, which was Richard Kind, which you might have saw. I posted online. I mean, I saw him when he walked in. I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, we know each other a little bit. Maybe not on name base. I mean, I know who he is. And Craig Bierko and Frank Santapadre, of course. Tom Leopold, who I think used to write Cheers and a whole bunch of other stuff. He's a legend. He's friends with my friend Tom from Dr. Katz, the one I was talking about who saw the documentary I'm in. Remember, just Tom Snyder. So I had to get a picture with him, and so I sent it to Tom Snyder. And he also knows that woman in my building. So it was fun, and the panel was funny. And the best, of course, my friend Bob Greenberg, who I've been making fun of for years because he's like, Dave, I'm one of the top 10 best Curly impersonators in the country. I'm like, but I think you're probably 10, and you might be 11. And he always does just old-fashioned imitations. He's so funny. And they said hello to him from the stage, and I said to Frank, I'm like, were you just doing that as a joke? He's like, well, it's kind of, I'm like, I got it. Okay, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy. Bob Greenberg is a mess. So, but I've known him for so long. He's the one I know. Him and Frank are the ones I know. Well, no, Evan I know the most. But I mean, I met those guys in like 1987 or 8. And they both still look exactly the same. It's incredible. So anyway, we're all hanging out, and then we decide we're going to go get something to eat. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds fine, but where are you going to find something to eat at 10 o'clock at night? Well, here we go. Apparently, this place, I think it's called the Hollywood Diner. I don't even know where we were. When we left that location, I didn't know where the hell we were. Apparently, it's a 24-hour diner. So there was a lot of action in there. Look, there was about 6 of us. I got a photo. I'll show it to you. And I think I ordered a grilled cheese, but Lily was a genius. This is the 16-year-old kid. She orders, here's what I want. I want 2 sunny-side-up eggs. Already I'm in love with her. 2 sunny-side-up eggs. I want crisp bacon, and I want whatever she said. I can't remember, because after that I was like, that is my favorite order. And toast, which is exactly what I had on Sunday. And she goes, now after that, I want waffles with bananas and Nutella. And her mother's like, no, just bring them all together. She's like, no, mom. I always stick up the kid. I'm like, hey, she's got a plan. Why don't you just let it ride? And she's like, no, sir, we can get them all together. And then she stops him again. She's like, all right. She's got the plan. So he stops like, no, sir, you can bring them out separately when she's finished. It was really funny. She had a plan. And for somebody so thin and put together, but of course being 16, she ate the whole thing. It was so fantastic. She ate all the eggs. Then the waffles came out with the bananas and the Nutella. And I know I got a picture. Somebody took a picture. I got to get it. She folds the waffles up and eats the thing like a sandwich. It was fantastic. I'm like, you are a genius. I love. And I said, listen, when you start going out with boys, there's nothing better than a girl that knows how to eat. It's fantastic, especially as long as you're thin. It's great when you can go out with a girl that likes to eat, or at least maybe that's just my theory. I think guys like it too. It is great. You don't want a girl that just eats this, because you want to eat too, so then it's even better. So it was great watching her eat and actually like not just picking at stuff and just going for it. And I'm telling you, the picture is so adorable with her holding that waffle. It looks so delicious. And I got a vanilla Coke. You know, no one ever has that. And it was so good. The food was just, you know, okay. It didn't matter. The fact that it is possibly open 24 hours, oh my God, this is a game changer. Finally, we found another a decent place we can go to that might be open 24 hours. I got to let it tell know. Oh, also, before I go, before I finish this story, Bill Persky was there. I used to work with this guy. Now, this guy used to work for he used to write the Dick Van Dyke Show, a classic episode of that. Then he created That Girl, then he used to direct Kate and Ellie. He made that movie Serial from 1980, which I talked to the class about because he had told me, which I've told you, that he was always angry at everything. We had the opening song, and they switched the opening song, and the movie died. And it's my fault. You know, they did that to us. So I hadn't seen him. He's in a walker. He's 92. God, I guess he must have been my age when I was working with him, and he seemed old then. And we did the Food Network show together. I hadn't seen him in a long time. It was great to see him. So great to see him. And then I told him about the class. I told him about Serial, and I said how the opening song changed. Yeah, they changed this. Like, 92. Still angry. How can I not be friends with a guy like that? Still angry about that opening song. So that made me happy. Anyway, I ended up, because it was cold and I was on the west side, I'm like, all right, I'm going to take an Uber. Did I walk a little? No. I know what I, yeah. So I took, yeah, I called an Uber. I think I took two Ubers in a row. Did I? Yeah, I did. Right. I had them pick me up on like 23rd and 6th or something, like at a Best Buy. I remember. Yeah. I definitely had them pick me up because now it's just so much cheaper than a cab. And I just couldn't walk. I was tired. I had to wake up early again. I had another big day tomorrow. And it was cold. And I was wearing a suit. And I just didn't have a heavy jacket. And I'm like, no, it's time to go home. I got to get home. I got home, let's say, around 1 in the morning, watched a little TV, and then woke up at 5:30 and did it all over again. And now this time, I went to the cell. I got my hair cut. I walked to the cellar, you know, so also with my lack of sleep, I'm walking 3 miles, I'm walking 2 miles, I'm doing a lot of walking too, so, and I'm staying up late, so I don't know whether it's good or bad, I guess it evens itself out, and so then I go to the cellar to do the show, and we do a 2.5-hour show. I invited no guests because I knew we had the party, but I guess I fucked that up, but I didn't know about the party until last week, so we decided let's just do the show until we have to go to the party, so we just did this like marathon like show on YouTube. Some of you probably saw it. It was horrible from 6 to 8:30. I was on my phone for half the time. My friend Caitlin finally called in at the very end. It's so weird. It was just such a, I was like, so what else do you guys want to do? I mean, I had nothing planned. I just, next year, the problem is she's got to tell me in advance so I can plan it out. I did not have time this week for there to be a 2.5-hour show. You know what I'm saying? And we stayed there until the party. Then Mike and I walked over to the party. And the party was fun as usual. Definitely, ran right into Attell. And we walked over there together. And everybody was congratulating him on his special, which I still haven't seen. And then he told me, which I guess if you've seen the special, which everybody is texting me saying how great it is, except for Kevin Brennan, as we talked about. And he said, yeah, Kevin already wrote to me that he hates it. And I'm like, well, that's, you know, as long as he's not doing it behind your back. Attell told me, and it's so great. It's so great, Dave, that you made it, you know, 40 minutes. He goes, well, we had to. It was only 37. And Netflix told me, apparently he explains this on the special, which I didn't know, but I never knew this. He goes, you have to do 40 minutes because it's a certain algorithm that they put out. So we had to extend it by 3 minutes to do something. I heard that 3 minutes isn't very good, but everybody was coming up saying, I really liked the special. So it was really nice for him. And I'm glad we got to talk and we hung around a little bit. And then I sat with Mike and Alon and, you know, the guy that does the movie, he has another thing for me of Matt Salicuse to do with Mark Norman, where I'm going to play an agent, like a union agent, which will be super fun in Philadelphia in June. You know, I like doing all that acting stuff, so that's fun because Matt Salicuse is awesome. And we just had a good time and talking to everybody, and, you know, it was fun. I was drinking. They had the signature drink was ginger ale and rum. So I was feeling good, and then I saw Tom Papa and his wife, who I didn't realize she was a comic. She goes, yeah, I remember you. And I'm like, yeah, I remember you. But it was nice to hear. And I was talking to him and her and Bonnie McFarlane. And I can't remember who else. And I was explaining my classes and my lectures. And I think I was telling them the Lincoln thing, and they loved it. It was exciting. They're like, I want to take that class. And I'm like, oh, well, you should. And I would know if they weren't interested. They would have turned away, looked at other people. But I think I got them. I don't know. You know, they were asking questions. So I told them so. But I've been enjoying telling them. I think I told them the Breakfast Club story. I told you guys last week. Because those stories are kind of fun. And I don't know. People seem to like them. So I'm telling them all over the place. Where am I going to do this? Where am I going to do this material? I want to go on stage and tell that Breakfast Club story. That's hilarious. Well, who's going to care? No one cares. So we see everybody. And then remember the thing is, like, you know, I saw outside Steve and we were talking and I was like, well, not for him, but people are like, the party's so weird. You know, it's like weird. There's comics, but it's like this. And the comics don't really want to go. No one does want to go. I'm like, no, the party is not for the comics. It's for the staff. It's for the waiters and waitresses and bartenders and people that work there. That's who it's for. And they come in dressed up sometimes in costume or dressed to the nines because this is their party, like you would be working at a Cheesecake Factory and you have a party for the staff. They're going to dress up. Some people love to dress up like they would do at my office. It's for the staff. So that's why I'm like, no. He's like, no, did Noam come? I'm like, Noam has to come. He has to make an appearance. He does not want to go, but the boss has to show up at a Christmas party. It's mandatory. And that's why I think Liz says it's mandatory for the comics to come, because when the comics come and there's celebrities like Michael Che and people like Attell and I'm clearly missing Sam Morrell, that makes the staff really happy that they're showing too, and it's a big deal. And that it's always catered. The food's incredible. And they had beer pong this year, and they have a DJ, and it's just lots of fun. It's really a little crowded, but it's all right. And the drinks are flowing. Liz is always bartending. It's so funny. Like, I saw one of the guys I know I hadn't seen in a long time, his manager, and he's like, what do you want? I'm like, well, I'll tell you, I had that drink upstairs, and Liz goes, Jessica, no one cares. So I know if she's butchering me again, we're back on good terms. So everybody likes making fun of me. I don't mind. It's funny. I always see it as a term of endearment. So anyway, like I said, the party was good. And then finally, this Lori Palmateri took outside Steve to say, hey, do you want to meet Kat Tam? Isn't her name Kat Tim? Kat Timpf, who is the super hot girl on Gutfeld on Fox News. And she's so pretty. She's a correspondent and everything's so pretty. I'm like, oh my God, I have to meet her. Because my sister and brother-in-law are obsessed with Gutfeld. They love it. I know three people that are obsessed with the show Gutfeld, which is the highest rated show in late night television. And I had to take a picture. So she was very nice. And I'm like, please let me take a picture. And so I got a picture of me and Kat. She's really pretty. And I sent it to my sister. She was thrilled. I sent it to my friend Linda. She was thrilled. And Steve took the picture. So he wanted to meet. He's a big Gutfeld guy. So... yeah, that was, you know, there's only a couple people I could say, hey, check it out. This is the girl from Fox News. You know, like a lot of people don't seem to give a shit. So, but I knew that my sister and brother-in-law would be excited. And it's funny when you send somebody a picture like that at 1 a.m, you know, they wake up and you're like, what is this? So then I hung out and then it was, I don't know. Then I guess it was 1 o'clock and I'm like, you know, I think I'll go next door and have another drink by myself. You know, I'm like, let me get out of the party. And it went over, it was just me and this gay kid at the bar with my friend Todd. And the gay kid's telling, oh my God, my friend, he was saying, he does comedy, he's like married to my other friend, this girl, and I got up to go to the bathroom, and he called me out. That's not right. And I'm like, wait, I don't. And he had all these stories mixed up. I'm like, no, this guy sounds like, you're saying it's his third time doing comedy, and he already had like a showcase? Like somebody must be providing money for him or something. Like the whole story was stupid. And he goes, well, he performs as a seller. I'm like, no, he doesn't. No, he does. No, he doesn't. And I'm trying to explain to this kid, he does not perform at the seller. What's his name? And he says, his name's Remington something other. Now, obviously, I'm going to remember the fucking name Remington, right? And I go, I'm telling you, he does not perform at the seller. He goes, look, there's pictures. And I said, I guarantee he's taking my friend Rick Chrome's class and he's putting up like he's performing at the cellar, but I guarantee. So Todd actually took his phone and watched his performance. He goes, Jesus Christ, this guy sucks. This is awful. And I said, yeah, because he doesn't perform at the cellar. I mean, everything the guy said, I knew it was. So I texted Rick Chrome that night. The next morning he goes, oh yeah, I know that guy. I'm like, well, is he part of your class? He goes, yeah. And I'm like, well, this fucking douchebag is telling everybody he performs at the Cellar, which must happen to Rick all the time because they get to go up on stage on a Saturday at 3 p.m. and make it look like they're performing at the Cellar for their class. I knew I was right. I want to punch this kid in the face. He was very nice, but I really want to punch him in the face because he just wasn't paying attention and giving me that attitude. You know, he does perform. I'm like, kid, you're not paying attention. He stinks. I guarantee you, I know almost every comic in the business, and I never heard of your guy before. Now you listen to me. You're trying to muscle in on me. I'll make so much trouble for you, your head'll spin.
Start talking.
I was sent by a friend of Johnny Fontaine. His friend is my client. Would give his undying friendship to Mr. Walsh. If Mr. Walsh would grant us a small favor.
Walsh, who's listening?
Give Johnny the part in that new war film you're starting next week.
And, what favor would your friend grant Mr. Walsh?
You're going to have some union problems. My client could make them disappear. Also, one of your top stars has just moved from marijuana to heroin.
Are you trying to muscle me?
Absolutely
not. Now, to me, you smooth-talking son of a bitch. Let me lay it on the line for you and your boss, whoever he is. Johnny Fontaine will never get that movie. I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, Wop, Greaseball, Goombas come out of the woodwork.
I'm German-Irish.
Well, let me tell you something, my Kraut Mick friend. I'm going to make so much trouble for you, you won't know what
hit
you.
Mr. Walsh, I'm a lawyer. I have not threatened.
I know almost every big lawyer in New York. Who the hell are you?
I have a special practice. I handle one client. Now, you have my number. I'll wait for your call. By the way, I admire your pictures very much.
Check them out.
Anyway, by that time, I was drunk. I guess I had 3 rum and ginger ales, and then a beer, and then 2 more beers at the bar. I was drunk. I was buzzed. And it was raining. Of course, it was fucking raining all day. I didn't want to open my umbrella, and I'm walking a little, and I'm like, I was going to get an Uber, but I was nervous this kid was going to follow me out, so I just wanted to get going because I didn't want to fight with him again. And I walked, and I'm like, no, I got to keep walking. I can't take an Uber yet and just go home because I'm drunk. And I just can't be home yet. I've got to walk, and this little light rain is actually, I think it's a little helpful. And I'm walking, I'm like, but I really want to stop because it's cold and rainy. And if it wasn't rainy, maybe I'd walk a little further, but I just need to walk. So I walked up to Union Square, and then I walked up further. And then finally, when I got to 23rd and 3rd, I'm like, all right, now I'm ready to call an Uber. And I called an Uber. So it's 2 Ubers in a row, plus my bag also took an Uber. So, but what are you going to do? This time of the year, the weather and temperature is so weird from when you leave your house to when you come back in the house that it's impossible. That's why I don't take the city bikes this time of year. It's the strangest thing. I don't take city bikes between March and April for some reason. And then I pick up again soon. Like, I haven't taken the bike to work in a long time. But, I mean, I take it in the dead of winter. But then I'm prepared for that because I know how cold it's going to be. But then this time of the year, it's so weird. I just can't work it out. So, but the Ubers have been pretty good because they've been more reasonable than a cab, which is hilarious. Good. The cabs will go all out of business. Fuck them. Like I said before, I really couldn't care less. And so then on Wednesday, I was lucky. I got to work from 4 to midnight. Now, I had planned that in advance because I knew I was coming out. I got home at 4 in the morning and went to bed at 5. So if I had to go to work the next day, I would have gotten a half hour sleep and then had to go to work and pray I had nothing to do on Wednesday. And I knew I had a big day Thursday, so I was like, I planned it, so I'm like, let me sleep late. But I had to, I worked all the way till 3 in the morning on these projects. I was trying to go over them. I was trying to time them out, but I couldn't. You know, I got to put videos in and pictures and music, and it just takes a long time to put these things together, not just my mother's, but then the lectures for the class. And now I got to do, because I just didn't figure it out the right way, I got to do 88 and 89 next week. These things take so long to put together, get all the slides together and everything. It's a real tough thing to put together, and it's a real time consuming. Fortunately, I don't have anything going on next week. Like I said, tonight I'm seeing the play that David Yazbek wrote called Dead Outlaw. So I'll be doing that tonight. Tomorrow I'm going to see Paul Lauren and Julian Villard, our friends from the Billy Joel podcast, perform here in the city. Tonight I'm going with my friend Laura. Tomorrow I'm going with my friend Rachel Lenahan. And then Sunday, I think I'm supposed to go out at like 5 o'clock right after work because it's this guy Ryan's birthday at the New York Comedy Club. I don't want to go, but I get the feeling I'm going to drink. And then, of course, I got to go. But I got nothing to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so I'll have plenty of time to put all this stuff together for another big day on Thursday. And then I think on Saturday of next week, I'm going to see Book of Mormon again because my friend's kid is the lead. So assuming I can get tickets to that, that's what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll bring our pal Teethy. We'll see. Well, that's all coming up next week. Oh, let me just tell you one thing. This is hilarious. Before we leave, because we're talking about the surge pricing. Remember, the $15 are going to charge you for coming in Manhattan. Such a disaster. Now, the New York City is trying to charge the New York City Marathon, $750,000 for running over the Verrazano Bridge. When they do it in the New York City Marathon, they're saying you cannot do this again until you pay us $750,000. They're like holding them for ransom. It's awful. People are, the New York City Marathon people are saying, go fuck yourself. Like, this is how much money we lose when we close down for the past 15 years or something that you've been doing this or whatever it is, right? I mean, I don't know where the city is getting the balls to do this, and everyone's fighting back. New Jersey is fighting back furiously, like, wait, why are we getting charged to come into Manhattan? What do we get? You're getting $15 to fix your infrastructure. We're getting nothing. So everybody's giving it a try, and they're all getting backlash, and hopefully everybody will just go fuck themselves and let us run our meager little lives without overcharging all these horrible things. Of course, that is funny. I think the New York City Marathon people, which I hate anyway, they should just cancel the marathon. But I think if they were going to do it, they should just say, good, we won't use that bridge. We'll rerun the marathon. Go fuck yourselves. That would be awesome. But you kind of have to use it because what are you going to – well, you know, you could have everybody running on the ferry. that'd be hilarious. No, they're going to have to – well, then it'd have to run through Jersey. I'm trying to think of the – yeah, they really do have them by the balls. You have to go to Staten Island. Well, then you just make it a four-borough tour. Who cares? Fuck that marathon anyway. Anyway, that's all I got for you today. Obviously, next week, I got more. We'll talk about the play. We'll talk about the concert with Paul Lauren and all that kind of stuff and lots of other things that always come pop up on another episode of Just Get Out in the City. So have a great week, everybody. See you next week. Get out of here.